Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
KMOX is at your service. Welcome to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service. Now, here's your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, welcome to the second hour of the Garden Hotline. I'll be giving the tip of the trowel shortly, but right now you can get it in queue with your questions, comments, or concerns, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Thanks for having me on your show, and give a call and we can talk about plant selection, caring for, ups and downs, the annuals, pansies, cool season annuals, and cool season vegetables. If it stays this warm and gets warmer, it's going to be problematic for those cool season things. And how about your bulbs, your daffodils, tulips, and things like that? Once the foliage is about half brown, you can go ahead and cut it off. I've cut off a lot of mine already, but I still have one clump that I have not cut the foliage off of some daffodils. Your ground covers, your houseplants, your lawn, your perennials, your roses, and vines. The clematis this year is so early, and they're looking so striking. The colors are just fantastic. Roses, like I said, the knockout roses are unbelievable. Shrubs, trees, vines, and as I said, water gardens as well. I'll share my thoughts, and always remember my answers, comments, and opinions is certainly not the only garden path to take. And remember, it's just an option for you to consider. Mass producing today, and during the week, I do landscape consulting, which I come to your yard and take a look at specific things that you have questions about, whether it's aesthetic or problem solving. Also, keep my eyes open for things that I think might be impacting your landscape as well. I call that a walk and talk, so you can go to my website, MikeMillerDesigns.com. The homepage will have my email address and phone number, and I'll share my 40-plus years experience, professional experience, with you and related to your home. Now, a special recognition for individual, group, or situation that's made an impression on me, and it's brought to you by St. Louis Composting. That's today's tip of the trowel. And the tip of the trowel goes out today to Brightside St. Louis. They are extremely appreciative of all the support you've given them through all the years. But right now, this is the day, hashtag Give STL Day. So Brightside St. Louis, along with lots of other organizations, are all part of this hashtag Give STL Day, where they're accepting donations. And through your support and volunteer power, Brightside St. Louis has really been dedicated to cleaning and greening St. Louis for 35 years. So let's let them keep up the good work. Donate today. The best time to enhance your donation is during the 20 and 20 time slots. During this time, all donations up to $500 will receive a portion of a $2,000 or $20,000 bonus. So help Brightside get a piece of the pie. So that's at 6:20 to 6:40 p.m. and 11:20 to 11:40 p.m. as well. So a gift of $100 provides 500 trash bags for neighborhood cleanups, and a gift of 25 perennials for planting in a neighborhood garden. So Brightside St. Louis. Oh, man. And remember, hashtag Give STL Day is a 24-hour online giving event as well. So the St. Louis Community Foundation to grow philanthropy in St. Louis metropolitan area, and many other organizations are benefiting during the hashtag Give STL Day. So Brightside St. Louis would appreciate your donation. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline. We will be back after these messages.
This is the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with your host, Mike Miller, on KMOX.
Yes, folks, any questions, concerns, or comments, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Matt will answer your call, and he will ask your name and where you're calling from. One thing, too, as this weather's getting warmer, way ahead, like to almost 10 degrees warmer than normal, raise the height of your mower blade. Cutting your grass too close when the sun gets intense and it gets intensely hot, This just offers an opportunity for a weed invasion because it exposes the crown of your lawn plants. The lawn is not just one big plant. It's like zillions of them. But you should not be cutting it too close. I don't know why people cut their grass, whether it's bluegrass, whether it's fescue, whether it's zoysia or anything else, so close. It just, you know, it doesn't make any sense to me. You think, well, if I cut it close, I won't have to cut that often. Most of the time, that is not the case because you get in this cycle and you cut it too short. So this time of year, your mower height should be at least at 3+ inches, regardless of the type of grass that you have. So like 3 to 3.5 inches or so. Also, my zoysia, I did my first fertilizing this past Wednesday. So I'm going to be fertilizing once a month all the way up until, depending upon the weather, late August or early September. So fertilizing the warm season grasses, your zoysia, and if you happen to have Bermuda that you want to grow, but fertilizing your cool season grasses, no, don't do that during the hot weather because it can cause some real problems. It can force some growth, and the cool season lawns do not like the hot weather anyway. So let's go over to Carlisle and into Barbara's yard. Barbara, how are you today?
I'm fine, Mike. I have a question. I have an old, it's probably about a 20, 25-year-old sweet gum tree in my front yard. Well, it's all shade, and the roots are up, starting to come through. You can't hardly mow around it.
Right.
I have seen people put hosta plants around their trees. Could I still do that with that and put the mulch and soil over the top of those roots that are there?
Oh, sure. I mean, you could do that. You could do the hostas. You could do, I mean, traditional type ground covers as well. If you wanted something, you know, during the wintertime that's going to cover it, like an evergreen ivy, you know, that type of ground cover or periwinkle, because they're going to be evergreen, so they're going to have presence year round. And then the hostas would just add, let's say, pizzazz from, you know, weather, again, weather dependent. I say that so often, but that it really plays a role. Sometime between, let's say, April all the way up until the frost gets them in, you know, October.
Okay. Now, you said evergreen. I missed the second word. Evergreen what?
So, either like English or Baltic ivy, or there's a plant called periwinkle. It's an evergreen ground cover, which in the early spring, it has a blue flower on it. And the periwinkle, the botanical name is vinca, V-I-N-C-A, vinca minor.
Okay, I've had those before in pots and plants.
Yeah, that's a different. This is a different plant. This is a ground cover.
For ground cover. Then.
Right.
Okay. Well, I didn't know if I could still do that, so I would just buy some type of soil and put it down and then plant them.
Yes.
Cover it with mulch would be fine.
Yes, just mix it in with the existing soil. Don't just lay it on top of your existing soil. It's got to be a blend. And,
okay.
You know, by planting this time of year, ideally, it would have been better to do it a little bit earlier so the things could get established because summertime is our most, let's say, treacherous season for newly installed plant material. But if you plant now with the way this weather is and they're predicting with this really warm spell, you're just going to have to watch it very closely. You may have to water everything one or two times a day while the temperatures are so high before the root systems can get established and start, you know, absorbing enough moisture.
Okay, I was afraid I just got all my pots planted yesterday, and I'm running late, but the weather's been so terrible.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure, and now let's go to Seal, and Seal lives in St. Louis. Hi, Seal.
Hi. I'm calling. Hello?
Hey.
Yeah, I'm calling about our peach tree. It's a young tree, around 4 years old, and my husband said that he says the tree's dying, and he said the leaves have got, I think that's called gall, where they get kind of bumpy, and I think some insect might have laid something on in the leaves.
Well, you know, I'm not familiar with the galls getting on the leaves of peach trees. They get on maple trees and things like that.
Well, maybe it's not a gall, but they're bumpy, and He says the leaves are dying, but
are they actually falling off? Or are they just wilted, or what's the problem?
They're kind of they're shiny and they look okay, but excuse me, they're wilty or they're bumpy or it's hard to explain.
Okay, but if the color's good and they're regular size, I wouldn't be overly concerned with it. I just leave it alone.
Yeah, well, I just pick them leaves off that are on there because they're unsightly. But
well, sometimes, like when the buds are pushing out the leaves, and we have hail or we have some, it could be just physical damage due to the weather, as opposed to actually something that's causing it disease-wise, insect-wise, or anything else. So if they look like, you know, if the leaf looks good and these lumps or bumps are just like, you know, it's kind of like you hitting your hand or your head, you get a bump on your head, consequently from something hitting it. So that's what the, you know, could be happening to these. Now, also with these peach trees that young, I don't know if this is semi-dwarf, dwarf, or full size, don't let any peaches form for another couple years because it's going to...
We've had peaches for a couple years already.
A four-year-old
and
tree...
Really, really, really beautiful. It's a small one. It's not a full size.
Right.
It's a dwarf.
But, I mean, fruit production on a young tree that's not totally established like this one is, even if it's been in the ground for 4 years, can really kind of stress it out. So just watch out about letting the peaches form. If you want to, that's your peach tree, that's very fine. But it's not something that's, to the benefit of the tree overall.
I got you.
Okay.
Thank you very much, Mike.
So it's, again, physical that's caused a problem for your leaf. Let's go now to Diane, and Diane lives in Chesterfield. Hi, Diane.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a problem. I have a Japanese maple. We've lived in the house 2 years, but the house is about 30 years old. And the maple is about 7 feet tall. Beautiful. The umbrella type with the, leaves that come down, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
This spring, there were some dead patches in it. And I've been watching it thinking, okay, it's going to come back. Well, now I'm seeing some dead leaves in spots. Is the tree gone? Is there anything we can do to save it? It's in such a prominent spot in the landscaping.
Yeah, individual branches. The unfortunate thing about these Japanese maples, I mean, they're a grafted hybrid, and there are some that go on and on and on for years. I was at a house, I think it was last summer, and they had one of these Japanese maples in front of their house, hadn't really gotten much taller than when they put it in. It was about 6 feet tall, but it was almost 15 feet wide. It was spectacular. But there are other ones. There's a gentleman that lives right up the street from me on Federer, and he knows about plants. He knows how to grow plants. He even grows bananas and all this other stuff. But he's had a Japanese maple fairly close to his house, so it's somewhat protected. It's on the north side. But sometimes they can get damaged, due to the weather and everything else, because they are hybrids. So any individual branches that, virtually have no leaves on them at all, or, go ahead and just cut those off. And there's not really too much you can do. That's not to say the whole tree is going to go downhill, but this is just one of those, possibilities when you're growing a plant that's this kind of touchy.
Okay. And if we lose the plant and have to replace it, is there something else that you would recommend putting in a spot like that? It's kind of like in an L place, protected on the north side of our house.
Right. If you like this plant, I don't see anything wrong with coming back with the same kind of plant. Because of the size and everything else, there's not too many things that are going to be that particular size.
Okay.
So just realize that that's a circumstance. That's why everybody loves them. The color of the leaf, the texture of the leaf, as well as the height and the spread or whatever. But
it
there's
was
not
so beautiful when we moved in.
Right.
Now, we did put in an irrigation system in the beds. We'd had one in the lawn before. But I monitor it. It's not like I let it run every week on certain days.
Right.
I check the soil to make sure that it's dry or, and turn it on then.
Sure.
So I don't think that we damaged it with the irrigation system.
Well, who was this irrigation system with pipes and everything?
Or
is this just one where the hose lays on top of the ground and just kind of lets
water? Oh, no, it's with pipes.
Okay.
It's with pipes. It was professionally installed.
Yeah, so maybe they actually, did some damage to the root system. I'm not saying that was the case, but that could impact, your tree.
Oh, maybe that's what happened. Oh, shoot. Trying to do the right thing.
Right. Yeah, putting irrigation systems in and around existing plant material, I mean, it sounds like a good idea, but sometimes it can cause other problems.
Maybe that's what happened, because this is the first year we've noticed it, and the irrigation system was put in last year. Okay. Well, at least the new plant will not be bothered by the irrigation system. So
exactly. Right.
Thank you, Mike.
Sure. And let's go to Carol in Eureka. Carol, how are you today?
I'm good, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Couple questions. First one, I have some limelight hydrangea bushes. They're about 3.5 feet tall right now, and I'd like to move them. Can I do that now? Or
you're just taking a big chance to move them this late.
Okay.
Because I'm assuming they're fully leafed out, and you know, with our screwy weather, this hot, dry, you know, in theory, you know, I don't know how much the humidity is going to be. Even doing the extra watering and stuff, you're going to disrupt the root system. It's going to be trying to get established going into summertime. Our summer may be just absolutely brutal. So if this is something that you really like, I would not do it. I'd wait until, you know, mid to late or, you know, later August through September and even early October.
Okay. All right. And then for the last couple of years, this time of year, there's some kind of animal that's going through our mulch and kind of turning it up with the dirt. We live on 4.5 acres, so there's a lot of wildlife. But do you have any idea what that is?
It could be. It's tough to tell. I mean, squirrels are digging around all over the place. They're planting acorns and stuff like that. There are other things that, you know, it's not going to be a vole because voles are too lazy to be doing any kind of digging. So it's got to be, you know, something along that. Maybe if you have skunks in the area, skunks are looking around for bugs like grubs and things along that line. So it's a little tough to tell.
Okay. Okay. And then one final question. We've got some new planter areas in our backyard that kind of then transition into the woods, and I want to put some perennials in there. And obviously they need to be, I know nothing, not everything is deer resistant,
right,
that I plant because they'll eat anything. But do you have a recommendation on like 2 or 3 plants you think I'd be safe to plant?
I would say take a look at the ferns, like Japanese painted fern, the woodland fern, things along that line, things that have a little bit more furriness to the leaf. Also, even you may not like the yews, but they'll transition into the woodlands and give you some evergreen qualities during the wintertime. So something along that line. Anything that has a fuzzy leaf, you might look at that. So a Brunnera, Brunnera. There's several different varieties of Brunnera. You might try those as well.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks for your help.
Sure. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline with Mike Miller, sponsored by Allen's Tree Service on KMOX.
Yes, folks, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. Just in case there's any kind of confusion, transplanting things from your yard to another location, there's been a couple calls today about that. I keep saying it's very, very iffy, but if you go to a garden center and you buy plants that have been either grown in pots or they're bald and burlap, that's fine. You can do it. Yes, you do have to water them because the weather is warmer and everything else. But when you dig up something, you tear up the root system of that plant that you're digging up from your yard to relocate or give away or whatever you're doing with it. But you're not going to tear up the root system in the same way when you buy something in a container. So going to your favorite garden center, getting a boxwood, getting a yew, getting some perennials, getting anything, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with doing that. Or getting a tree, be it a big tree, be it a little tree, it doesn't matter. So you can do that. Just watch out about transplanting as we're headed into summertime. So that's, you know, I just want to make sure there's no confusion about planting and planting transplanting. Those are two different things. Donald lives in Florissant. Donald, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Mike?
Very good.
I have the grass, and I've been cutting it about 1.75 inches. Is that too short?
That's too short. You're probably, you know, you're almost getting it down where you're scalping it. So I would say add at least 1 inch to that. Also, it's going to make your lawn feel softer too. People scalp their, you know, zoysias, so it feels like, you know, kind of like AstroTurf. It feels really stiff. So give it a little space and let it grow a little bit. Another advantage to that is, as I keep talking about, root systems uptake nutrients and moisture. They send it up to the grass blade, just like a leaf on a tree or anything else, and it makes chlorophyll food, and that helps make everything healthier. So the less the blade size, the less ability there is to make food.
But, you know, at the beginning of the season, you have all that dead grass there. I wanted to get it dead off. That's why I cut it lower.
Right. Initially, the first cut of the springtime, yes. I even had mine down to like an inch or so. I got it way down. And so then consequently, with each week or each cutting, I just raise it up a half inch. And now I've got it about 3.5 inches or so.
For Georgia?
Yes.
So what should I be cutting mine, about 2.5 or...
Yeah, 2.5, you know, and if you feel like it's, if it's not looking really that great, then raise it up. Because, again, the more grass blade there is, the greater the chance for making food chlorophyll then help the whole, help the individual zoysia plants with helping how the lawn looks overall.
Okay, well, thank you, but I have another question.
Sure.
I have an American holly. It's been losing leaves for about the last 3 weeks or a month. But there's new leaves coming on. Is that normal?
Yeah, if the leaves are not at the end of the branches, in other words, they're interior leaves, so in other words, closer to the trunk, that should be happening. That's exactly what should happen when the new growth begins.
They're not closer to the trunk.
Okay. They're in at the individual end of the branches?
Kind of, yes.
That's not necessarily a good sign. But it could be resulting from all the crazy weather we've had. I mean, it could have, partially gotten root system damage from all the rain and stuff like that.
I got American holly, and I put them in quite a few years ago. They were small. Mm-hmm. They're about 15 or 20 feet tall now. And half of it gets berries, and the other half doesn't.
Well, maybe what it is when you bought it, actually there was a male and female planted in the same pot.
I think that's exactly what it was, and they're doing real good.
Perfect.
Thanks, Mike.
Sure. Now let's go from Florissant to Springfield, Illinois, and see what's going on with Larry. Larry, how are you?
Hey, good morning, Mike.
Hi.
Mike, I've never wintered over knockout roses in pots. I'm going to try it. I have a few questions.
Okay.
The size of pots you'd recommend,
okay.
And how do you handle basically cutting them down in the winter?
Basically what I do, I grew mine in pots. I have four that grew in pots. I got them last year at Stark Brothers Nursery, and I grew them all last year, and then I moved them into my garage for the wintertime. I cut them back, when I moved them in, I cut them down to about 6 inches. What I did, though, is I put a plastic shelf, I didn't set it up on the shelf, plastic shelf without the legs. And so I just raised it up off the garage floor about an inch and a half. And I just set them all on that. And then because I have windows in my garage, I kind of put things in front of them so the sun wouldn't hit the roses during the wintertime. And pretty much that's all I did.
Yeah, now, Mike, how about the size of the pots?
My pots are probably 18 inches. But I will say one thing I did do in the wintertime. Occasionally, I would go out and water them about once every month or so.
Yeah, well, I've wintered over about 18 varieties of hostas.
Right.
So I'm used to doing it, so I figured it'd be about the same. But how much sun does your knockouts get where you have them outside?
Basically, I have them both sitting, I have four. Two are sitting. They're facing the west, but they're, so they don't get to... Neither of them get sun the entire morning time, and they get sun in the afternoon time, but they're probably getting about 6 hours of sun this time of year.
Okay, so you say about 15 inches for the pots wide. How about deep?
Same depth. 15 is the minimum. Mine are a little bit bigger than that, but they're pretty heavy, let's put it that way. And I use potting mix, and I fertilize them with rose food.
Oh, okay. All right, well, I'm going to try it.
Great.
Thanks, Mike.
Sure. Yeah, good luck with that. And I didn't know, because I'd never grown roses and stored them in the wintertime. I usually just kind of, I left the pots out with the roses. And sometimes that wasn't so good if we had a severe winter. But moving them into the garage, that really worked quite well. Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, back after these messages.
Welcome back to the St. Louis Composting Garden Hotline. Once again, here's Mike Miller on KMOX.
Yes, folks, we've got a few minutes, about 10 minutes or so, and if you have any questions, give us a call, 314-436-7900 or 1-800-925-1120. One thing, spring flowering shrubs, you better get those things pruned. And it's anything that you want to prune, it's getting a little bit late anyway, especially for evergreens, because you're cutting the stuff you're cutting off has already gotten a little bit acclimated to the intensity of the sun. And even though the leaves are that if you prune, that are now exposed, at one time were fully exposed, they've been shaded a little bit, you know, for the last month or so. So just watch out about sunburning. But spring flowering shrubs, definitely get those things cut off. As I said in the first hour, if the daffodil foliage, crocus foliage, tulip foliage, or any of those kind of spring flowering bulbs, if that foliage is about half brown, then you can go ahead and cut it off. But right now, the Asiatic lilies, there's several different types, are spectacular. This year was weather-wise, this winter was perfect for them. I've got three different varieties that I got them from Brightside St. Louis. I mean, wow, the deep color of them, and they're not budded yet, but they're getting close to starting to bud. So that's something that you should consider for your landscape. Martha lives in Florissant. Martha, how are you?
I'm fine, Mike. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
A neighbor of mine has a croton plant that she's had for 10 years.
Right.
And she has two stalks in the planter. Her question for you is, should she go ahead and replant it into a bigger planter, or can she split the stalks?
If they're separate stalks, they're probably separate plants. Now, understand, if she's had this for a long time, the root systems of these two separate plants that were put in the pot to make a bigger impact when it was originally, you know, set out to be sold, could be interwoven together, and pulling them apart could cause, you know, some damage to both of them. This is one of my favorite plants. This is one that this year I chose to have the major number of plants on my front walkway near my front door, as I did, you know, I'm doing the croton. So I like them because they're kind of like Jackson Pollock, the artist, his artwork, splashes of color all over the leaves. You don't really
grow them. Very much so, yeah.
Yeah, you don't grow them for the flowering at all, but the leaves are just absolutely, you know, striking. So I don't know what size pot it's in, but I think if it looks healthy and everything else, then I would say just leave it alone.
Okay, just go ahead and put in a bigger planter.
She doesn't even need to do that. Unless she's getting a lot of roots, if she has drainage holes, which I know she has to because they don't like a lot of water, if the roots are coming out of the bottom drainage holes, she can either put it in a pot that's 1 inch bigger than the one that it's in, or she can just kind of gently pull it out of the pot and just do a little bit of root pruning and put it back in the same size pot.
Or very
good. Same pot.
Thank you.
Yep. And now let's go from Florissant to West County and see what's going on with Dave. Dave, how are you? Hello, Dave?
Oh, sorry. I didn't hear you say Dave. I apologize.
That's okay.
Thanks for sharing your expertise and knowledge. I have a neighbor who's cutting back a climbing hydrangea. I don't know if that's the right time, but I'd really like to take a couple of those clippings and get them started. Is it the right time? And then two, the method of that, is it something like just putting water to get to root? Do I need to use a rooting hormone? And then what type of soil? Do I want something like a potting soil or vermiculite? What's the best way to ensure its success?
Basically, I would get potting mix for starting plants. That'll say it right on the bag at your favorite garden center. Some people end up calling and saying, I've always rooted them in water. I don't like to root things in water like that, because then once you get it, you know, you're just not going to get the right kind of root, you know, combination to me. But so I would get rooting hormone. What you want to do is take the cuttings. You want them about a foot long. You only want about, let's say, 4 or 5 leaves on that foot long cutting. Make the cut at about a 45-degree angle, and then let that tip of that cut heal a little bit so it's just not sticky. Then dip it into the rooting hormone. Do it when it's sticky if you want to. I don't like to do that, but some people will say they like it that way. Just dip it in the rooting hormone, and then about 1 inch or 2 inches of the stem, you know, put down into this potting mix for starting plants.
Is now the right time of the year to do this?
It's not the ideal time, but you should be fine. Just so you know, and where you're going to place this pot that you're going to be growing them in, make sure it's not in direct sun. Because, the climbing hydrangea, it's great, it's wonderful, but it doesn't like hot, intense sun, and especially when it's a cutting.
Right. All right. And then when you water that, Mike, I always worry that I'm watering or that the rooting hormone will wash off.
No.
Is there any trick there? No, it won't?
No, it really shouldn't. You know, so that shouldn't be a problem. So basically, you're going to have more rooting hormone there, because when you stick it in, you're going to go, and you could even shake off a little bit. It's just going to trigger some growth along that, but watering is not going to knock it off, no, or wash it off.
Does the rooting hormone go bad? Because I do have some, but it's been a few years since I've used it.
If it, it should be fine. It's a powder, so I can't see that it would be bad, but that's not to say it wouldn't be, but I would not suspect that it should be.
All right. Thanks, Mike.
Yep.
Appreciate your advice.
Yeah, good luck with that. Yeah, the climbing hydrangea, it does climb. It's a real unique kind of vine. When I worked at the botanical garden, there was an area of part of the English woodland garden I took care of, and it was growing on the side of one of the buildings. It was, like, striking. You couldn't really see the flowers all that much, but the fruits are small and dark, and they're in clusters. And then when I lived in Lafayette Square, the house I lived in also had it on the side of the house. Ann lives in Ladue. Ann, how are you today?
Fine, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Last week we had our roof cleaned off and our gutters cleaned, and everything was perfect. I've noticed over the last few days, fresh limbs. We have huge oak trees in our front yard. They're over 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Noticing little branches, fresh branches, all over the roof and the lawn. And I'm thinking those squirrels are back. Usually they do this in the fall.
Right.
But it seems like they're awfully feisty this year. Is there anything I can do about these crazy squirrels?
No, it is squirrels, and especially, and I've talked about it actually last hour, if the cut, on the twig that's laying on the ground is like at a 45-degree angle, it definitely is squirrels that are doing this, and they're just doing it, to chew, they're doing it to make nests, and the young ones are just coming out of the nest, so they're practicing all this stuff themselves. But there's really not, large trees, there's not too much you can do.
Okay, we'll just have to live with it.
Yeah.
And keep cleaning the roof.
And the ground.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
Exactly. Well, thanks so much.
Sure.
Appreciate it. Have a good weekend.
Yes, you too. And Margo in St. Louis, you're going to be our last call. Hi, Margo.
Okay. Mike, thank you very much for your program. My problem is my backyard is full sun all day. Is there any kind of a plant that I can put out there, like in a small pot, that will survive?
What kind of plant are you talking about? A house plant?
Just some kind of a small plant. I don't know that I would put in a small pot, because I hang them on my fence is what I do.
Okay.
In pots.
Well, there's all kinds of different types of succulents and cactus that you could hang that you really wouldn't even have to do any watering.
Oh.
There are even varieties. I don't know how small this pot is that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But, there's varieties of, petunias you could put in there if you want to have something with more color. There's certainly varieties of houseplants or tropicals that you could put in there. You could put in a small ornamental grass in a pot like that. So, the variety of different things is,
Petunias will survive in
full sun? Get the petunia variety that doesn't cascade, that stays in a lump. But,
okay.
A petunia or something, if the pot is really small, you're going to have to go out there and maybe water it every day during the heat of the mm-hmm. summertime.
Yeah, I would, yeah. Okay, that's great. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Sure, and then also anything you put out there, because you're going to leave the drainage holes, it's going to leach all the nutrients out, so you're going to have to fertilize on a regular basis, too. So, anyway, wow. Yeah. This spring has just been spectacular. There's no getting around it. As we're kind of transitioning halfway through springtime, we're saying goodbye to all the azaleas and things like that. The dogwoods are, sort of in the rearview mirror. But just make sure that you keep your plants watered. We had all that rain. You go, why do they need water? It just takes a few days for that water to percolate down through the soil, and then consequently your soil could be dry. So Mike Miller, KMOX Garden Hotline, I will see you next week.
The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses. Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.